Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
In this holiday season of red and green, some people are just seeing blue. I'm May Lily Lee. Thanks for joining us. Today, the holiday blues. What makes us feel down during the most festive time of year? And what can we do for the holiday blues? To talk about this and answer your questions, we have two healthcare professionals. In our Richmond studio is Shanae McCray, Director of Adult Mental Health at the Richmond Behavioral Health Authority. And from the studios of WVTF in Roanoke, we welcome Dr. Thomas Milan with the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Medicine at the Virginia Tech Carilion School of Medicine and Research Institute. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you
for having us.
I'm going to start with you, Shanae. Tell us about your work with RBHA.
Well, I've actually been working with the Richmond Behavioral Health Authority for the past 11 years. I'm the Director of Adult Mental Health there. We are actually the local public behavioral health agency for the city of Richmond. And we offer outpatient services to adults, children, and families with either mental health issues, substance abuse disorders, or intellectual disabilities.
And what about you, Dr. Milam?
Currently, I work on an inpatient unit at Carilion where I teach medical students and residents. So we're dealing with a lot of folks with severe mental illness that are in need of hospitalization, trying to stabilize them. And also I work at an outpatient clinic, again, teaching residents and medical students, both at the Carilion at our practice there and also at Blue Ridge Behavioral Health, which is a community mental health agency here in Roanoke.
While we were promoting this show, we decided it would be about the holiday blues. But let's be very specific. The blues are different from depression and can lead into depression. So we want to be aware of how folks can monitor that and avoid having a full-on depression because they didn't address some of the issues when they were just feeling down. We'll start with you, Dr. Milam.
Sure. I think this is a great topic, and particularly this time of year, not just because of the holidays, but because of the change in light. That is a big factor that affects a lot of people and causes mood changes this time of year.
You've been talking about seasonal affective disorder quite a bit.
Yes. We're trying to bring awareness to depression and how it could change in various periods of the season. Some people, because of their biological makeup, maybe depression or anxiety or other mental health issues tend to be more common in their families. These folks tend to exhibit more of these symptoms, and we monitor them closely because smaller symptoms like feeling down, feeling tired, having low energy, things that we all feel from time to time, folks that have seasonal affective disorder or maybe predisposed to depression, they feel these more intensely during this period of year. The weather change, the colder weather, the light change, less light, cloudy days, things like that bring people down. So we try to help educate them and others in their family and in the workplace how to tell what is the difference between just feeling down and low energy and where does that cross over into depression that may require more interventions such as psychotherapy or perhaps even antidepressant medications.
How would we know? Do we really need to rely on someone else to help be our advocate?
It's always good to have somebody else to talk to, particularly somebody that knows us, because in general, major depression, we characterize it as having a number of depressive symptoms, at least five of the nine major symptoms of depression for at least a two-week period. Lots of us can feel down for a weekend or for a few days or just have a bad week. But if symptoms continue to be problematic and last for 2 weeks or longer, then we begin to look at major depression and encourage people to go in and talk to their primary care physician or a local mental health agency where some screening can be done. And there are particular symptoms that we look for very specifically, loss of interest, changes in sleep patterns, sleeping too much or too little, increases in appetite or decreases in appetite. And certainly we want to catch people before they start feeling so hopeless and helpless that they contemplate suicide. A lot of times holiday seasons bring up anniversaries of people's deaths or other family issues that aren't so positive. And people can think about those, think about wanting to join loved ones, feeling hopeless, and do often think, I might just be better off not being here, not experiencing this time of year. And we encourage those folks to seek mental health care immediately.
And we'll be talking about some tips to deal with some of those manifestations. I want to talk with you, Shanae, about your adult population, those who are dealing with mental health issues. Do you find that right now at the Richmond Behavioral Health Authority, you get more and more people? Is this your busy time?
Yes, we do have individuals who may experience more depression than other times of the year. Typically, what Tom was saying is that we have folks who don't have connection with loved ones. We have individuals who don't have a lot of support, family support, and so they do tend to miss family and supports during this time of year.
Let's find this. Let's root this out right here. Is the number one source of the blues turned into depression around feeling alone, isolated, and just not feeling like anybody's there?
Yeah, typically people feel alone. They live alone. Many of the individuals that we serve are pretty isolated and do activities on a solitary basis. And so many of them don't have support and therefore do have increased feelings of depression.
Let's talk about some tips for coping. And I know, Dr. Milam, these are things you use with your own family. And one of the first things we talked about before the show is looking at your schedule and being reasonable with that schedule for the holidays.
Sure. I think a lot of people enter into the holidays without planning what's going to happen. And that's where you can run into problems, having unexpected visitors drop in or perhaps unexpected expectations of how one family member might want to do things this year and how another family member might not. We see people get very upset over a family member bringing a salad when they were supposed to bring green beans, and it can just throw the whole thing off. So planning things ahead of time, communicating if you're traveling, communicating with the family or family members that you're going to be visiting, talking about how long you're going to be there, who's bringing what. In our own family, we get together and we talk about what, you know, when are people going to be out of school? When is dad going to be out of work and not have to go to work? What are we going to do during those periods of time with each of our children? Trying to think ahead of time. It's also sometimes people have patterns of visiting family members where there are great challenges because some family members may drink more heavily during the holidays and that can cause problems. Talking about how you're going to handle that as a family. When we visit family, we plan as a family before we go. Visit our families in Winchester up in Washington, D.C. We talk about how long we're going to stay, whether we're going to stay at their house or in a hotel and which would be better, and how we're going to handle meals and downtimes, and also how we can communicate with each other if there are problems. If you just don't prepare for some of those things, particularly if the things that come up historically, then you can run into problems. So I do encourage people to plan and talk about it and talk about expectations. Additionally, talking about finances. We use one credit card that has a limit, and that is what we buy our Christmas presents with. So there, we know what we're going to spend on presents max, and my wife and I use that same card, and that's it. So we don't end up with all these extra bills in January that also causes stress for a lot of folks.
Shanae?
I would also add to if you're an individual that typically does activities alone, to maybe engage in some type of activity where you're with someone else. Maybe you want to volunteer at a local church or give back at maybe a shelter or somewhere else, but engage in an activity that definitely has someone else around to provide some support.
And one of the things you probably want to avoid if you decide, you know, I'm going to volunteer this year, that'll be really good for me, is don't do that at the last minute, because shelters and other organizations are loaded at Christmas time.
Yes.
Might want to consider serving a meal on the Saturday, Sunday, or Monday before Christmas or after or something along those lines, because one of the things that organizations run into all the time is people showing up on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve.
Right.
How can I help you?
You definitely want to plan that out and find out where the need is so that you can be most useful and helpful to the community. But I think definitely finding something that is satisfying to you, also going out and doing some activities, maybe window shopping, finding something that doesn't necessarily cost a lot of money, but definitely getting out and doing some activities that you haven't engaged in before would be helpful.
That brings up one of the pointers that Psychology Today reported on. In fact, this works year-round. Give yourself a break. Create time for yourself to do the things you love and need to do for your physical and mental wellness. I think far too often we're thinking about, okay, I need to do this for this person and I need to take care of this other person, and we forget about ourselves. One other point around holiday planning is we often have a tendency to say yes to everything at the holidays. Yes, I want to help this person out. Yes, I feel obligated to this part of the family, so I'll do this. It's important, isn't it, to be able to just say no?
Yes, it is. I think it's very important to be able to recognize your limits. I think that we definitely want to enjoy the company of others during the holiday season. But if it's something that we're not able to participate in because of financial burden, because we feel like we're overextending ourselves, I think it is important to say no, that you're not able to engage in that, and feel good about that.
We'll go to the phones now. From Wise County, we have George. Good morning to you.
Good
Hi,
morning.
George. You're on the air. Good. Thanks. What is your question or comment?
I have two questions. When did this phenomenon of holiday blues first become recognized? And the other question I was kind of curious about, are there tantamount conditions or, you know, happenings in other cultures that sort of duplicate what we seem to be doing this year around Christmas time in the West?
Let me understand part two. Do you mean, do other cultures experience holiday blues?
Yes. Do they have an equivalent thing that happens perhaps at some other holiday peculiar to them?
Okay.
Know?
Great. Let's take those two questions. George, thanks for your call. Dr. Milam, the origin of holiday blues.
Well, I think it's probably been around as long as humans have been around because this is our holiday season. In other cultures, they celebrate holidays at other times. And so that's an important part. And I thought his question is a very good one. I like that. How does it impact other cultures? So any holiday, be it a religious holiday or some other type of secular holiday that other cultures have as well, there's going to be stressors and expectations, the same kinds of things. The fact that Thanksgiving and Christmas in this part of the world are also correlated with changes in the light is a big factor as to why so many people have the holiday blues this time of year in our country. It is less of a problem in other countries that don't have the light changes. We lived in New Zealand for a year, and during the Christmas time, that's the beginning of their summer. And it's very different over there, and you don't see the depression part. You still see the financial part. I do think that since about the 1950s or so, that we've recognized this, partly because in our country, marketing and selling products creates this expectation that you're supposed to buy things, you're supposed to have a table that has all this grand food on it, and you're supposed to have these presents under the tree, and you're supposed to do this and that. Other cultures don't have some of those financial and marketing type expectations that we have. So some of that is particular to Western culture and to American culture. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but it also means that you have to manage it more effectively, because a lot of times during the holidays, people want you to spend more money. And that is not a good thing, particularly over these last few years when a lot of folks are facing very significant economic downturn.
We're talking with Dr. Thomas Milam of Carilion School of Medicine and Research Institute, as well as Shanae McCray of the Richmond Behavioral Health Authority. We go now to Radford. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning. I appreciate you taking my call and the topic here this morning. My question is in regard to any indication, any studies that you're aware of that might suggest a correlation of suicide, depression, genetically. So if a parent is diagnosed and treated, how would that affect the family? And I have a second unrelated question, if I may, real quickly.
Sure.
The discussion on the SAD leads me to wonder the benefits or differences between a full spectrum light readily available or getting a specialty SAD light.
Okay, great. SAD we'll take light. Your thank you so much. We'll take your first question. Suicidality, is there a genetic link? Dr. Milam.
Yes, there is. And one of the biggest predictors of suicide is previous suicide attempts, and also whether suicidality runs in family members. We're increasingly doing research that shows clearly that depression, anxiety, mental health disorders do run in families and have a strong genetic basis to them, just like diabetes and hypertension and other things. So raising them to the awareness that these are illnesses, not just interpersonal problems that are within families. So there is often a genetic vulnerability. Now, generally, suicidality comes in the context of an illness, in depression. So we often ask people more specifically about suicidality. We used to think that we shouldn't ask people because it might make them start thinking about suicide. But in fact, if you do ask ahead of time and talk about the other things, like Shanae said, the loneliness, the sense of despair, the sense of feeling like a burden, if you can get people talking about those things and also treat any underlying depression, if it's there and you begin to see the signs of it when people are younger, we tend to treat with psychotherapy or perhaps medications earlier in a preventive fashion, because you add depression into economic stress, hopelessness, maybe problems with job, problems with money, and that's the kind of stuff that begins to spill over into making people think that they'd be better off dead.
And also, David brought up the full spectrum lights, the false lights, as it were, that give your body the impression that there's still sunlight around. These things cost between $40 and $240. What do you think of those?
There is research showing that the light therapy is helpful. There's not clear research showing which kind of light therapy. Certainly, it's not just sitting under a light bulb. It is exposure to the full spectrum, similar as you can get to sunlight. So sitting in an office that has a lot of lights in it is not the same. These lights you sit in for various lengths of time, 20 or 30 minutes, once or twice a day, and that light goes in and affects a particular part of your brain that then gives the impression that there is more sunlight out there. I don't think it's worth spending hundreds of dollars on these lights. The research isn't that clear that they're that effective for people, particularly people with significant symptoms. I try to get people just to go outside, and even if it's chilly out, to go out, to walk around, to move outside during the day so that they can get some exposure to light. That seems to be just as effective.
It does seem like a bummer, doesn't it, when it's 5 o'clock and it's already dark.
Yes.
You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio as we discuss the holiday blues with Shanae McCrae and Thomas Milam. Next week, we'll be sharing Christmas and New Year events happening all across the state. That's on the next Virginia Conversations as we tap into the Department of Tourism for their expertise. Join us for that show. But in the meantime, stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Virginia Conversations. I'm May Lily Lee. Today we're discussing the holiday blues and how to prevent and treat them. Our guests are Shanae McCrae, Director of Adult Mental Health at the Richmond Behavioral Health Authority, and from the studios of WVTF in Roanoke, Dr. Thomas Milam, Assistant Professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Medicine at the Virginia Tech Carilion School of Medicine and Research Institute. We have on the line a doctor from Williamsburg. Good morning to you, Martin.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to our show.
Thank you. I'm a physician myself, ABIH, and I realize the holistic health things, and I'm also a staunch Catholic, and the health. Everybody wants to be part of a group or herd. We have that instinct that's built into us. And the oldest people, the older people in the family, and people who feel most responsible, and I think medicine would call this the type A personality, the person that takes on the most responsibility of himself. He says, I am responsible. And that person is especially stressed in a season when there's so much expected, everything's pouring in, everybody's making demands, and you feel like you've taken that on. You feel like you ought to be able to do something for these people, and you can't through circumstances, time, your own disability or whatever it is. And that is a very, that's a type of stress. And stress, of course, is what you can't control, a situation you can't control. And that basically is what kills. And
the
that's why in this dark weather and the gloomy season and diet, everything comes together here in the Northern Hemisphere especially, where melatonin's down. All these things come together to make the holiday seasons, whatever they are, so stressful.
But the holidays are a perfect storm for some people.
And I think what Martin is saying is really true. There are people that have personality types where they are driven, as he referred to as type A. There are folks that just feel that this is their role. They have to run Christmas or run Thanksgiving and coordinate everything. And when finances become more limited, when travel or perhaps disabilities, people aren't able to move around as easily, people struggling with chronic pain or people as they get older, it's not as safe to move around, those expectations change and they do feel like they're letting people down because they're not able to do what they used to do. I just finished a book chapter on suicide in the elderly because it's a high-risk population. As people get older, they're not able sometimes to travel and be with family as much as they were in the past. And they can feel like they're a burden, that they're no good anymore, they're useless, and we have to reach out to them and find new ways, new traditions to include people that might be excluded. So that's a great point that Martin makes.
Martin, thanks for your call. Now we go to Brimo Bluff and Michelle. Good morning, Michelle.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment on what you were saying earlier about the decrease in light and how people are getting outside less often, and they're also exercising less often outside, and that exercise can really decrease the symptoms of depression and the blues significantly, and, you know, both, you know, mentally ill and just people that just, you know, feel down. So I just wanted to comment on that and just say, you know, it'd be nice to tell people to give them their coats and gloves and get outside and get some exercise, even when it's chilly.
What about you, Michelle? What's your routine?
Well, I try to walk my dog as much as possible. That gives me an excuse to get outside.
Well, now,
and,
our,
you know,
pets bring us such happiness.
Work, but that seems to help. So
That's great. Thank you so much for that call.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. You know, I try to practice what I preach. I try to stay healthy. I encourage people, watch your alcohol intake and don't overdo it. Try to eat nutritious stuff and avoid a lot of high-calorie stuff at night that does cause weight gain. But I walk my dogs too, or not as much as I should, or take the kids out on a walk and use it as a time to get together. It is hard when you work during the day and you get out, you go to work and it's dark and you get off and it's dark. So going to a local gym or Y. My boys were swimming last night, and I went. I didn't really want to work out, but I said, you know, I need to, because exercise does help filter out one of the stress chemicals, cortisol, which is a chemical released in response to stress. And stress is, whether it's good stress or bad stress, the brain perceives stress as a stress chemical, and that sets off a cascade of hormone changes that can affect serotonin levels and make the seasonal depression worse. So exercising to filter some of that out, regular exercise, walking. It doesn't have to be jogging 3 miles. It can just be walking. Something as simple as that, where you're outside or inside at a school or a mall, trying to just move around a little bit more can make a big difference.
And I think this is also a prime opportunity to do a planned activity with a loved one or a friend or coworker, maybe taking a walk around the neighborhood, like Tom is saying, walk at the mall, window shopping. I think this is a perfect opportunity to do a planned activity with someone else.
And let's not underestimate the value of talk therapy.
Yes, definitely talking with loved ones, friends, calling up a friend that you haven't talked to in over a year. I know that the holidays are times where individuals tend to call up loved ones, families that they haven't talked to in over a year or so. So definitely talking to individuals can help as well.
But that doesn't give you a pass to bring up old stuff, old resentments, old
right.
baggage.
Definitely leaving that behind, but checking to see what they've been up to over the past year. Sharing positive things that you've done over over the past year, how you can get together, plan an activity coming up over the next month or so that you can do over the holidays. But that would be very helpful and healthy for you.
So we'll call it talk therapy with people we trust. How's
yes.
that?
Yes.
And, you know, Michelle's call touches on one of the Mayo Clinic tips, which is don't abandon healthy habits. They say don't let the holidays become a free-for-all. Overindulgence, as you said, Dr. Milam, only adds to your stress and guilt. Have a healthy snack before holiday parties so that you don't go overboard on sweets, cheese, or drinks. Continue to get plenty of sleep and physical activity. And the one piece I want to extract from that, Dr. Milam, is drinking. Is it not perhaps one of the tips that should be on here? Just cut back your drinking during the holidays, because I think people have a tendency to accelerate their drinking.
It's a tough time because they're just like there's a lot of sweet stuff out there. It's hard to not eat that. There's a lot of alcohol at parties. I mean, just because it's there doesn't mean people have to drink. Sometimes I encourage people just if you're used to drinking, just go and don't drink. Just drink soda or water or something else and enjoy the conversations. Alcohol really doesn't necessarily make everything better or smoother or make you more talkative. It's a depressant. A lot of people have problems with alcohol. And those can be highlighted when they get together with others and start talking loudly, start talking about things and people in ways that aren't real helpful and can be hurtful. So if people are going to drink, I say if you're between drinks or between beers, whatever, drink a glass of water, eat something, take your time with it, be aware of how much alcohol might be in a punch or eggnog or something like that. And certainly not driving, having a designated driver at Christmas parties, family parties. We see a lot of accidents that are alcohol-related that are really unnecessary, and people need to take greater responsibility for that if they are going to drink alcohol.
Shanae, do you find that alcohol exacerbates the issues of your clients?
Yes, it does. We have many individuals that we serve that are currently depressed, and so alcohol does exacerbate that. It also increases the risk for suicide. So when we do have that combination, we do take additional steps to do additional screening and monitoring so that we can assist individuals with minimizing that risk of suicide.
Furthermore, Dr. Milam, if we're now moving into treating depression using medications, alcohol is not going to mix with that.
It's not. I mean, alcohol affects the brain chemistry very negatively and essentially is a depressant. It changes brain chemistry. And in some people, because of their genetics, it changes it significantly, reducing serotonin, reducing norepinephrine, dopamine, the other chemicals that are very important for maintaining a healthy mood, sleep, appetite. So alcohol can have a huge effect on that. And so if you're going to take medications and try to have a more positive mood, certainly drinking alcohol of any kind or using other drugs works against that, and we strongly encourage people to not use alcohol. You know, I'm big into encouraging people, to everyone, to not use it. We have tons of alcohol in this culture. It's related to most major medical illnesses, to suicidality, as Shanae pointed out, and depression. It's related to all sorts of things that are negative. And I think we could do more to try to talk about the negative effects of alcohol. People do drink a lot this time of year, but that certainly doesn't make people happier.
We go now to Charlottesville. Byron, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
What's your question or comment?
Well, just a couple of callers back, a gentleman had asked about the genetic component to suicide. And the way that it was left, it sounded like there was a connection between genetics and that particular behavior of ending one's life. But it's the literature really is about the connection between genetics and depression. And while I guess I wanted to ask your guest, isn't it really more a connection between the genetics and the depression versus the behavior, even though statistically people who kill themselves precipitate an increased chance that their relatives will kill themselves because it becomes a viable option versus a genetic predisposition for taking one's life?
Okay, thank you for that comment. Do you want to go ahead and take that, Dr. Milam?
Sure. I think it's a good point and one that is worthy of clarification. Suicidality can come in the context of a number of different situations. People, as Shanae pointed out, people can drink alcohol or use drugs and become intoxicated and try to feel better with that and then not feel better and actually feel more hopeless and then attempt suicide or contemplate suicide. So it can come in the context of using alcohol or substances. It can come in the context of depression. It can come in the context of bipolar disorder. Each of those, alcohol, depression, bipolar disorder, each of those has a genetic component. It doesn't mean that everyone that has it is also going to pass it on to the next person. We're trying to understand some of the hereditary patterns and also how to develop blood tests and things to see if people are going to be predisposed for those kinds of illnesses. Suicide is not an illness in itself, and I think that's what the caller is wanting clarification on, and it's a very good point. It is in the context of other things. So it is important that those other things are addressed. If a family has a pattern of suicidality, what is causing it? Is it alcohol fueling it? Is it depression? And then focusing on treating that illness to prevent a legacy of suicide within a family.
There is a National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, just FYI. The number is 1-800-273-8255, manned 24 hours a day. That's 800-273-8255, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. We'll have all of the information, whether it's a website or a phone number, on our own website at virginiapublicradio.org. Shanae, how can people get in touch with the Richmond Behavioral Health Authority?
If you need, feel like you need services, if you're feeling down, experiencing depression or feeling suicidal, you can definitely call our 24-hour crisis unit, which is 804-819-4100. You can also access the services that are available that RBHA provides at rbha.org. That's www.rbha.org.
And people can get anonymous help from you via the telephone?
Yes, they can definitely get anonymous help via the telephone, and we can definitely point you in the direction if you're not in the Richmond City area and you still need assistance. We can definitely direct you into the right direction.
Dr. Milam, a website or phone number?
Sure. At Carilion, at Roanoke Memorial Hospital and all of our sister hospitals that are part of our system, we do have emergency rooms where people can go and call 911 and get help. We have an organization that's called Connect. And their number here in our area, area code 540-981-8181, and they can call and speak to a trained mental health professional there who can guide them into accessing services, whether they're urgently needed for themselves or a loved one, or answer questions and also get some coaching about whether they need to make an appointment or go to a mental health treatment center.
And if you weren't quick enough with the pen, again, we'll have all of those contact numbers and websites on our own website at virginiapublicradio.org for Virginia Conversations. We go back to Williamsburg. Good morning, Felicity. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Great.
I was wondering, in regards to the advice about getting exercise, for those of us who have jobs that are already very physically demanding.
I take that's you?
Pardon?
Oh, very physically demanding already. I take that's you?
Yeah. Well, I go up and down stairs at Trace. So I'm a waitress. but there's a stress on the job negate the exercise I'm getting at work. And even though I'm tired, I should still try to exercise outside of work, or should it be good just to get rest? Or
what an interesting dilemma. Yeah, you're physically exhausted already through your work,
yeah,
right? Thank you for that question. Let's take it with Dr. Milam.
I think it's a great point, and I often try to give myself credit for exercise at work because I have to walk around the hospital a fair bit and try to take the steps when I can. We have a program in our hospital that's in the stairwell reminding people that there is a built-in Stairmaster right there by going up and down the steps. So some people are doing lifting, walking around the job. Some people wear these pedometers. You hook it onto your belt, and it tells you how far you've gone. And so I encourage people sometimes to get one of those, wear it around work, and see how much they are walking and moving around. For many people, because of work, that does limit their access to exercise. I'm not a big morning exercise guy, but sometimes I really try to do it. And in the evenings, people are tired, but sometimes you still have to try to do it. Walking, just moving around, and as Shanae has pointed out, trying to do this with a family member so you can walk and talk at the same time and walk your dog and get outside and move around. It's much better than coming home and just sitting on the couch and talking. It's just, it is hard. It's not going to be the natural thing you want to do when you get home and you're tired. But certainly, if you can walk even 20 or 30 minutes in the evening, it's going to make you feel better. It's going to make you sleep better and overall have better health.
And I would agree. I think it's definitely important to try to carve time out, 20 or 30 minutes like Tom is saying, after work. Because I think exercising at work is a part of your job. It has a whole different meaning than exercising when you're at home for pleasure or relaxation. So I think taking time out of your schedule after work to debrief, to relax, to take time and do something that's comforting for you is very important. So definitely working out and exercising after work has a totally different meaning than when you're working and up and down the stairs and waiting.
I know Felicity has already gone, but I imagine she's a little disappointed. She wanted to hear you say, pop open a six-pack or two, and then just relax. Don't worry about doing any kind of physical exercise. Today we're talking about holiday blues and how to overcome the blues. Dr. Thomas Milam from the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Medicine at the Virginia Tech Carilion School of Medicine is with us, as well as Shanae McCray of the Richmond Behavioral Health Authority. We're going to take just a moment to hear a few messages. We'll be right back with more Virginia Conversations.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, supporting public discourse through sponsorship of Virginia Public Radio. Resources for parents and teachers online at veanea.org. More information about Virginia Conversations and other Virginia Public Radio programming can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.
Thanks for joining us for our discussion on the holiday blues. I'm Maylily Lee with Virginia Conversations, and we're talking with Shanae McCray, Director of Adult Mental Health at the Richmond Behavioral Health Authority, and Dr. Thomas Milam from the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Medicine at Carilion. And we now have a call from Portsmouth. Good morning to you, Mike. How are you this morning?
Yes, I was calling because my family never celebrated holidays because of religious reasons. And as I got older, I no longer associate with that religion. But I had no holiday family experience year after year. And so I felt, you know, some of the holiday blues, because on the holidays, sometimes the family, everybody would just stay in their own rooms with the door closed. No one would do anything. You wouldn't say Merry Christmas, Thanksgiving dinner, anything. And it's like the whole world is celebrating this holiday except for us. And, you know, it became bothersome.
What was or is your family's religion?
Jehovah's Witness.
And how does that make you feel today? It sounds like that was a problem when you look back in retrospect.
Well, yeah, it was a problem as a child as well. And as children, we were taught to believe what we were told, so we kind of masked over it. But when you become an adult and you no longer agree with those teachings, it left a huge void, because I had no holiday experiences, and sometimes a coworker or a friend would invite you for their holiday thing, and you would go and you would feel awkward. It's almost like going to a whole nother country, because I had no idea of no tradition, no memories, and I had no family around.
So is this a tough time for you right now, or are you having a hard time dealing with the holidays as they're approaching now?
You know, this year has not been as bad as some years. Some years were pretty bad, and I actually wrote a memoir. I wrote a book, actually, and I talked about this, among other things. And I feel like a lot of the advice that Ja have said today about exercising and things like that, I've used to help, because I had an automatic, I was already prone to depression. It ran in my family. And so this was just one period of time. I remember going to a Chinese restaurant on Christmas, and they actually had a news crew in there with a camera interviewing people about why would you eat Chinese food on Christmas. And I just told them I didn't want to be on camera, and they asked me why was I here, and I told them it's just another day. And mm-hmm. I went ahead and ordered my food. And it was pretty sad, but, you know, I find myself going through things like that every year.
All right. We really appreciate your call, Mike. Thank you so much. And happy holidays, for what that's worth. You know, Shanae, Mike, yeah, thank you. You know, Mike's call's fascinating because here is something that a lot of people can relate to. His holidays were not joyous. And there's an opportunity, once you're extricated from the family, to start doing, as an adult, what you want to do. But he's still, you know, he's still struggling with that. We're, so many of us are still tied to our old scripts.
That's definitely a challenge, thinking about old childhood memories and not being able to make the connection there with the holidays. But what I think is important in addition to that is trying to create new traditions, trying to do things that may be joyful for you now, meeting other friends and creating own memories with the holidays, learning as much about the holidays as you can since you didn't have that opportunity when you were younger, but definitely creating your own tradition and your own experiences that will be more meaningful for you now.
And, you know, the idea of exercise has shown up a lot in this particular program. And we're not saying that exercise replaces needed meds if one is dealing with clinical depression or the proper therapy. It's one of the tools, right, Dr. Milam?
Certainly it's one of the tools. And as Shanae has pointed out several times, it is the need to find a sense of meaning and purpose. Each person seeks that, a sense of meaning, a sense of connectedness to others, a sense of belonging. And sometimes society provides those avenues, various religious holidays. But folks that are not in those religious traditions sometimes have to find other ways to bring meaning. And as Shanae has pointed out, you're making new traditions, reaching out to friends, having the courage to ask a coworker, hey, do you want to meet up after work and just talk a little bit? Or do you go to a gym? Can I meet you over there? And we walk together? Or something new. People are often shy to do that. But creating new relationships, new senses of meaning, taking on a new activity, crocheting, knitting, doing something like that that's fun where you're creating something. I always encourage people to do something like that. Exercise, diet, nutrition, getting adequate sleep. Felicity had pointed that out in her call earlier, is really important. But for some people, their depression, their mood gets so significant, and that can be highlighted this time of year because of the weather and the light, but it gets so significant that they get so depressed that, in fact, they do need medications, antidepressant medications, to help them.
We go now to Virginia Beach. Hi, how are you this morning, Sean?
Hi, doing well. How are you?
Great.
So I've heard statistics that in the spring and summer, the suicide rates are higher than in the winter. And I was wondering if there's something different about winter depression that causes people to be less suicidal. I know that, you know, the winter blues and depression and suicide are three very different things, but given that they're linked, why is that? And given that this statistics are true.
Great. Thanks for your call, Sean.
I think there are various statistics showing various things, and it's you have to look at the culture where people are because that affects suicide rate. You have to look at religious beliefs. That affects people's completion of suicide or not. The light, where they are geographically, all these things affect people. So, again, for our winter is not the winter around the world. So you have to look at all this stuff differently. Sometimes during the summer months, people think they should be feeling better, and they're not. They see everyone out there with in the light, walking, having fun, being outdoors, and yet they are not. And so they feel more isolated and more depressed, and that can lead to suicidality. Sometimes people avoid the holidays in terms of thinking about suicide because they don't want the family members to link that particular holiday to that person's death. And trying to be, if you see it that way, of being courteous not to commit suicide on a holiday. There's a lot of factors involved in some of those statistics, and sometimes it depends what you read.
And we have another call from Blacksburg. Ursula, good morning.
Oh, hi. I'd just like to share that I'm over the blues. I had, for decades, actually, terrible depression. My mother was also diagnosed with, what's it called, paranoia, schizophrenia, and all that. And it was very heavy. She used to go off her rocker. She used to go at Christmas. I don't know if you'll hear me because my battery's low. And I started a psychotherapy finally 10 years ago, which became a psychoanalysis. And it really, really, really changed my life, along with tons of other wonderful things I've studied and in holistic, all sorts of holistic health and spiritual health. But really, I so encourage anyone who's really feeling the worst possible. I know it is, and it is absolutely possible to get out of it, but you do need to, yeah, to talk about it with someone who knows how to listen. So I just want to say it's possible. It's fantastic to be out of it.
What a great call. Thank you so much, Ursula, and happy holidays. Shanae, what a great endorsement for psychotherapy.
Definitely. I would encourage, if you are experiencing depression, and it goes beyond the holiday blues, if you're experiencing it longer than several days or several weeks, to seek assistance, to talk with someone, a therapist that can help you work through some of the emotions and feelings that you're having. But therapy is definitely one of the indicated treatments for depression, in addition to medication, if you need that assistance as well.
Now we go to Charlottesville. Mark, good morning. You're another blues survivor, Mark.
Oh, good morning. Yes, let's see. Yeah, I'm a survivor. I'm going to say what helped was keeping a journal. It's kind of counterintuitive. It takes personal inner solo fortitude. I would suggest looking in the newspaper for churches. If you don't belong to a church, I'm an agnostic. But by simply visiting churches, that's a good way to meet people. You don't have to talk about being depressed. It's just a good way to get out and just meet people. It's a way to just stop sitting and feeling alone and sorry for yourself, because it's a very touchy subject for people. You go to funerals for people who have committed suicide, and people in the congregation will say, oh, I wish he had said something, we would have helped him. But in fact, people really don't know how to deal with people who are depressed. You do need to make new friends. And if you can afford a therapist, that's essential too. But a lot of people can't afford that, because often insurance doesn't cover it. As you know, as you've covered that subject. Anyway, but I think writing about it, if you can, really helps. Writing and reading your own writing. It was very therapeutic.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that insight, Mark, and happy holidays to you.
Thank you. You too.
I would agree with that you're right, Mark. Some individuals don't have the means to pay for a therapist. What I would encourage you to do is to contact your local community services board. They also serve individuals who are uninsured and don't have means to pay for services and may have therapy services available there. So I would point that out as a resource for individuals across the state to contact your local community services board.
I want to point out, too, that my friend Mark, who works with Starbucks, just completed a toy drive for the holidays for kids. But this year, he said, now he's reached a point where a third of his collections are actually for seniors, the basic things that they might request this time of year. And then a lot of them are isolated and alone. The elderly just don't – many of them don't seem to have the support or network that they need. And sadly, to this point, I asked him what kinds of things are they requesting for the holidays, and he said sheets, blankets, that type of thing, and they need company. So it seems like our elderly population is at great risk for the holiday blues this time of year, and that's really worth considering if you have extra time on your hands and you can think of somebody who could really use a visit.
I would agree. Definitely, if you have loved ones that are in your family that are pretty isolated and alone, you may want to give them a call, pay them a visit, bake a cake and share the cake with them. But I think definitely sharing time with our older adults that tend to be isolated will be beneficial for them at this time of year.
Now we go to Christiansburg. How are you, Jennifer?
Oh, hi. I just wanted to offer a suggestion for people who are physically tired at the end of their day and don't want to work out. I think that yoga is a really good option. There's all different levels of yoga that you can practice, so some are not as strenuous as others. And just practicing yoga is very relaxing, both physically and mentally. And I also think that it can really help people deal with stress. It helped me through a stressful time in my life, and there's a lot of options available. People can go to classes, or they can watch YouTube videos to learn how to do it, and it's something you can do in your own home. So I highly recommend it.
Thank you. We appreciate that tip, and I think especially Felicity does in Williamsburg, going up and down those stairs with the trays. Thank you so much for that tip. And Mark from Bedford, do you have a question or comment for us this morning?
I just wanted to reach out to a previous caller named Mike and also comment at the same time on what your guests talked about, making a new relationships, perhaps.
Right. Mike is the Jehovah's formerly Jehovah's
Mike,
Witness.
You do what I did and many years ago and start a new relationship with Jesus Christ, the one whose birth so many of us celebrate this time of year. It has helped me tremendously, and I think it would help Mike as well. So thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Mark. I think a lot of people do find solace in their spiritual practice or in their religious practice. Absolutely. Michael from Prince George, good morning.
Thanks. I just wanted to call in and ask about your thoughts on magnetic therapy.
Magnetic therapy. Yes. First of all, explain.
I'm talking about the recently FDA-approved therapy that uses a high-intensity magnet placed against the side of the head to temporarily affect the brain chemistry.
Well, I'd be glad to speak to that. I think there are some wonderful new and less invasive treatments for severe mental health issues.
And by the way, as you answer that, Dr. Milam, mm-hmm. Michael, just hold with us for a moment, okay? Stay on the line.
When people have severe depression that is not responsive to medications, and that can be up to 30% of people that don't respond to medications or have minimal response, ECT, electroconvulsive therapy, or some people call it shock therapy, is still the most effective treatment, and it's done very humanely. And we do many patients every day at our facility, and it's life-saving for folks, and particularly folks as they get older. It's a tremendous treatment. It still requires anesthesia and can have some problems with memory and such. So other ways of reproducing that effect that aren't as invasive, the ones your caller speaks about, using magnets, other things to essentially trigger a robust release of neurochemicals in the brain to relieve depression, the things we're trying to get medicines to do. But these newer types of treatments are showing real promise, transcranial magnetic stimulation, deep brain stimulation, other things that we can do that aren't invasive, they don't hurt, they're quick, but can be very effective for treating people, particularly those with severe depression.
Okay. And Michael, have you been using magnetic therapy?
No, I'm fortunate enough. I'm not affected by most of this, but I know people who are.
Okay.
And I just try to stay abreast of the more recent technologies.
All right. Thank you so much for your call as we round out the ending of this show. There is a place, by the way, in Fredericksburg known as the Zen Farm, which uses polarity therapy and neurofeedback. So there's a lot of work that's, you just mentioned shock therapy, which is the high end of brain treatments. But there are, as you say, ways to manipulate brain movement, wave movement of the brain and that sort of thing, and many practices out there. Well, we only have just a few moments left in our program, and we want to thank our two guests, Shanae McRae, Director of Adult Mental Health at the Richmond Behavioral Health Authority, and Dr. Thomas Milam of the Carilion School of Medicine. Go to our website at Virginia Conversations and find out more about those websites and phone numbers we gave you. I'm May Lily Lee. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We'll see you next time.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.